Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It was Socrates who said, "It is better to suffer evil than to inflict it on others." If we had to update Socrates' wisdom for today, we would say, "It is better to be bullied than to bully others." Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today I got a few news items, things that have popped up in my news feed and my email inbox recently, and they all kind of coalesce around a similar theme. Pompous, arrogant bullies trying to get their way, or at least pompous, arrogant people attacking others. That nowadays, when you deal with bullies, it's not somebody who steals your lunch money or somebody who throws you into a giant puddle of water outside of school, which might have happened once to yours truly. Yes, indeed, I did get bullied. If you can imagine that, a spindly little kid as myself with gigantic curly afro-ish hair was a grade A target for that. But, you know, although I think nowadays with social media, bullying has gone off the charts with what kids can do to one another. At least back in my day, when you were bullied, it ended at 3:30 in the afternoon. And then when you went home, you didn't have to deal with it. But kids today, my gosh, they deal with bullying 24/7 on their phones. But for us, those of us listening to this podcast, I think a lot of the bullying that we see is more online, Twitter, Facebook, people who will say mean and nasty things to try to put down other people. And there's even some people who do this, in the academic sphere or in the popular writing sphere that I want to talk about today. So I've got an article. Well, it's actually a comment responding to my friend and colleague Jimmy Akin's critique of the recent open letter to the U.S. bishops made by several theologians accusing Pope Francis of heresy. I'm not going to get into that letter too deeply. Maybe in a few weeks I'll have Jimmy on and we can have a good back and forth discussion on that. But there's a response from a priest that I consider the pinnacle of arrogance and bullying, in my opinion. And other arrogant responses from David Bentley Hart in the New York Times on socialism. So we will get to that in a sec. I'm also going to start with Democratic House Representative Brian Sims and his, frankly, what he's doing is bullying in the video that I'm going to show you. So we're going to talk about how to deal with bullies, especially arrogant, pompous dismissals of the truth. That a lot of times nowadays, you have people that you'll show them the truth and their response to it is just to arrogantly dismiss it because they don't have a response to the truth. They have no response whatsoever. So they engage in these mean-spirited elementary school tactics. And I want to walk you through how to expose those tactics and respond to them if they're sprung on you. By the way, I wanted to remind people, I got a few new study series up at trenthornpodcast.com, continuing the catechism study, and I've put forward my first scripture study, going through the beginning of Matthew, Mark, and Luke's Gospels. They're short. They're about 2 minutes. My goal is to do a lot of these short little two-minute studies, give you little nuggets of wisdom about the catechism, scripture. I should have a church history one here going up later this week. That eventually I would like to compile. Ideally, I'd love to turn this into an app. I'd love to create kind of an app where you can go through these little study series lessons with me here on the Council of Trent podcast. If you think that's a cool idea or if you want access to the study series and other great content, definitely go to trenthornpodcast.com for as little as $5 a month. You get access to great and wonderful bonus content. And even for a $5 monthly gift, I will send you a little thank you video that you can definitely share with friends, family, and all other kind of people. So check that out at trenthornpodcast.com. And now let's go and talk about the bullies. So this is an article I found on Daily Wire. A Democratic representative who spent weekend harassing pro-lifers on video has meltdown when hit with criticism. Pieces by Amanda Prestigiacomo. She says, State Representative Brian Sims of Pennsylvania spent the weekend harassing pro-lifers peacefully praying outside a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic. And when the Democrat was hit with criticism for his outlandish behavior, he went all in on the crazy. For example, when pro-life site Live Action reported on Sims harassing an elderly sidewalk counselor, the elected official responded, "Bring it, Bible bullies. You are bigots, sexist, and misogynists. And I see right through your fake morals and your broken values. Hashtag be real." Sims, who offered $100 to have three pro-life teenage girls doxed, D-O-X-X-E-D, for daring to pray for unborn babies, then labeled pro-lifers criticizing his antics as bullies, that's ironic, haters, P-asterisk grabbers, and baby cagers. This reminds me of a caller I had on the radio show a few weeks ago when I did Why Are You Pro-Choice? She was I'm pretty sure she was a millennial woman, but you can tell people who are really steeped in this kind of liberal politics, they can only think in that framework. And anyone who disagrees with them, say on abortion, must be some kind of radical member of the Republican Party who's a walking ideologue, and they want to trade these newscast things back and forth, like bringing up issues related to immigration or Donald Trump, instead of saying, hey, why don't we just talk about the actual issue at hand? I actually have the video here I'll play for you. This is Brian Sims Facebook live streaming himself going and saying he wants to dox minors who are praying in front of a Planned Parenthood facility. Doxing is a bullying tactic. It's a dangerous tactic where you find someone's personal information and you put it out in public in a way, directly or indirectly, to encourage intimidation of those individuals. I mean, you know, a few months ago, Tucker Carlson, a mob showed up at his house banging on his door while his wife is hiding inside in the pantry. That is what these people do. That's what they do. So, you know, that's why I try to be careful with my personal information. But it's hard. I don't want to live a sheltered, cloistered life. I still want to go out. I want to talk to you all about my family, about my personal life. I can't give too many personal details because there are people who will do this stuff. So here is Sims targeting these young women.
Representative Brian Sims here, and I am outside the Planned Parenthood at Southeastern Pennsylvania. Oh, no, they're leaving now. What we've got here is a bunch of protesters. A bunch of pseudo-Christian protesters who've been out here shaming young girls for being here.
Hi.
And so here's the deal. I've got $100 to anybody who will identify any of these three.
So we're
going to donate to Planned Parenthood.
I'm
going to donate to Planned Parenthood.
And
so look, a bunch of
more
white people standing up in front of a Planned Parenthood.
I love one of the girls says, I'm not white. But the way this guy is, I mean, my goodness. So I tweeted him. I said, hey, Representative Sims, you told my friends at Live Action, bring it, Bible bullies. Okay, you want to come on my podcast and talk about whether abortion should be legal? Why don't you come on and let's talk about it? And I shared with him the link of the conversation I had with Coco a few weeks ago. If you haven't heard that, check out the podcast archives. It was a great half hour, 30-minute long civil conversation about abortion, longer than we get to have normally on Catholic Answers Live. And we had a good conversation. So I would love to get this guy. It's one thing to walk up to people on the street and bully them and talk over them. But when you have to sit across the table from another person, that really shows whether you can make sense of your position or you just have to attack other people. And that's going to be a running theme in the pieces I want to look at today, that you should point out to other people that what someone does when they attack you, when they bully you and use these kind of tactics, as we'll see in some of these other pieces I want to look at, they want to get under your skin. Their goal is for you to become unhinged, emotional, and to respond likewise. Absolutely. Do not do that. I mean, now I've you know, gotten emotional sometimes. It does happen. I'm not saying you're a failure if you do, but just be cognizant of that. Know that when people online, on Twitter or Facebook, when you see they're attacking you and throwing these epithets, the best way you can get under their skin, the best way is to kill them with kindness. So when I have people online who attack me and say really mean and hurtful things, I say, oh, it's so nice to see my number one fans writing me again. I'm so thankful for your support. So I do it in kind of a wry, tongue-in-cheek sort of way. And some of these people go apoplectic. There's a word of the day for you. They get hysterical. See that I'm not going to take it personally. I'm going to let it roll off my back because I see this person. I feel sad for them. The other thing we should do not look at them as an enemy. Do not look at them as somebody, oh, this is a person that I have to, you know, they're not the enemy I'm trying to beat. When I see people, and I just got an email the other day from someone else who accused me of cowardice for not, you know, engaging them, saying mean things, I told a friend about it. I said, I just feel really sad for this person. And this person identifies as a Christian, but I know that they're spiritually hurting inside. And it makes me sad to see if they're, you know, moving away from God. And I would like to try to help them, but I might not be the person to help them because they're so angry towards me. So look at when other people attack you. Remember what Jesus said, blessed are you for whenever anyone utters something false or reviles you because of my name. Jesus said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. It's the hardest, I think that is the hardest teaching Jesus ever gave. love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. Because I have, it's funny, when people do that to me, when people attack me, I'm always like, oh, you know, I want to pray for them, I want to help them. Where I lose my poo, let's keep it PG here, is when people attack my children or my wife. When somebody attacks or is rude or mean to my wife, I just go straight into scorched earth mode. I remember there was a woman who was mean to her at the grocery store. The checkout lady was mean to her and my children. I said, who is she? What does she look like? And I drove down there and I was going to find her. I just knew she had a Boston accent. I wanted to say, all right, I need everyone to repeat after me. I parked my car in Harvard Yard. And, you know, I got there and realized, nope, I'm being irrational. I should not do this. So for me, that's where I'm most tempted is. And my wife, too, she will totally attest to this, that when she sees people, we've been on campus together and she's seen people be rude and mean to me, and she just fires back right at them. And I'm like, Laura, it's OK. I'm all right. You know, you're protective of people that you care about. And so I think what you should do is to point first, kill them with kindness, and then you should point out to them, then if I'm such a bigot, you can even say, you know what, let's say you're right. I'm a bigot. I'm a hater. I'm a terrible person. Let's say it comes to abortion. I am just the devil's handyman here. How does that disprove my claim abortion kills babies? So what's fun with the ad hominems when people attack you is to simply say, yeah, let's say you're right. I'm a horrible person. Okay, sure. Let's just say you're right. How does that disprove my claim about the church or my claim about unborn children? Don't attack me, attack the argument that I'm making. See, that's an ad hominem. That's what people do with ad hominems, is they attack the person rather than their argument. So go ahead and tweet Representative Sims, say, hey, why don't you talk to Trent Horn about abortion? He's invited you. Let's have a civil conversation. If you think you're right, prove me wrong. We can have a conversation about that. So that's why you should point out to people, you don't really have a solid argument here. You're just attacking me, not the truth that I'm sharing. You haven't refuted the truth I've put forward. So I hope Representative Sims gets back to me. I'd love to have him on the podcast. I mean, I vigorously disagree with him, but we can have a conversation. I hope so. Here's the next bit. Excuse me. Related to this theme. So a few days ago in the Register, my friend, colleague, and senior apologist Jimmy Akin wrote an article at the National Catholic Register called On Charging a Pope with Heresy. And this is in response to the open letter to the bishops of the Catholic Church signed by a number of theologians accusing the Pope of heresy. And here's the thing. This is what I hate when this issue comes up about critiques of the actions, the letters of the pontificate of Pope Francis. We live in a hyper-polarized age. We live in an age where it's us versus them. And so there's always, people have to be slotted, it seems, into two extreme camps. That so in this case, so it's like, for example, with Brian Sims, for him, it's either you are pro LGBT abortion, pro everything he believes in. And if you disagree with him, even on abortion, if you think it's OK to go pray in front of an abortion facility peacefully, you must be the rabid Republican anti-type to him that believes all this other stuff over here. You could only be in one of these two camps. You can't be anywhere in the middle. That I hate that in the partisan age we live in. So with Francis, it ends up being, oh, well, you're either Pope Francis can never make a mistake and his critics are bigots and homophobes and they're the radical right, the rad trads, and Pope Francis can do no wrong. Or the other side, Pope Francis is a heretic. He's an anti-pope. He is like one of the absolute worst popes we've ever had. And he's doing all these terrible things. Like there's these two extremes instead of, hey, how about Pope Francis has done some good things in his pontificate? He's done some other things that are questionable, ambiguous, things that I believe one can criticize. Now, you can criticize the Pope while respecting his office just like any other bishop, but you have to do so while understanding and accepting and respecting the office that he holds as successor of Peter. But that doesn't mean, of course, he's beyond criticism. Paul rebuked Peter in Antioch when Peter was teaching correctly but didn't live out the church's teachings by refusing to dine with Gentile Christians. So, you can't just have it here in the middle to say, oh, there's things that I don't agree with, things that I think that the Pope could have articulated better, or I don't think he wrote this as clearly as he could, or I don't think this was a great idea that Pope Francis did. You can have that without jumping off the ledge and saying, oh, the Pope's a heretic. We have to be really careful about throwing around that word, say, oh, so-and-so is a heretic. Because in canon law, heresy is a very specific sin, very specific canonical crime. That calling someone a heretic is like calling them a murderer. So you shouldn't say somebody's a murderer unless you have proof, unless you have really strong evidence of anyone, especially if they're a pope. So Jimmy goes through in his piece and lays down what canon law says, and he summarizes everything, and he says, to show that someone is guilty of heresy, you have to say that the person is baptized. So if you're not a Christian, you know, you can't be a heretic. So that's an easy one. We know the Pope's baptized. He refuses to believe a particular truth, and he must do so in an obstinate way. He can't just misspeak. And the truth in question he refuses to believe must be a dogma. It has to be a truth that the magisterium of the teaching office of the church has infallibly defined to have been divinely revealed. And if you want the intricate explanation of the differences between doctrine and dogma, or infallible doctrines that aren't dogma, I did a whole interview with Jimmy a while back. You can check it out on the podcast, or you can see his new book, Teaching with Authority. So I read through this open letter to the bishops. And once again, I don't want to go through the whole thing here, but I was not impressed by it. They basically said, there are things in Amoris Laetitia that contradict what the church has infallibly taught previously at things like the Council of Trent. And there are things the strongest part, and I don't even think it's that strong, is the document says Amoris Laetitia endorses heresy. The problem here is that other faithful Catholics, you have like Cardinal Mullard, for example, Cardinal Gerhard Mullard, I think he's the prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, CDF. He has come out and said, no, you can understand Amoris Laetitia. You can understand the document as being in perfect harmony with previous Catholic teachings. So the letter does not address any of the attempts that people show, here's how you can harmonize this. Now you can have disputes about whether things in Amoris Laetitia were a great idea to write. I think that's totally fair. I think there's some things in there that are unclear, and I don't appreciate the way that they are written. But I'm not going to go so far as to say this is heretical, this is heresy, because you have other faithful Catholics who said no. You can use Pope Benedict XVI's hermeneutic of continuity to show this is still, you can understand the document as being in line with previous Catholic teachings. And the open letter to the bishops of the U.S. saying Pope Francis is a heretic, it doesn't deal with any of that. And Jimmy points that out. That's the strongest part of the document, and it doesn't make its case. And then the document goes on saying Francis is a heretic because he appointed people who either maybe disagree with church teaching or have been found guilty of certain crimes. That doesn't show someone's a heretic. It just shows they might have spectacularly bad judgment. This argument also cuts both ways, because a lot of the critics here are criticizing Francis for retaining people who were originally appointed to ecclesial positions by either Pope Benedict or Pope St. John Paul II. So if you don't like the people working under Pope Francis now, a lot of the crimes they're being accused of happened a while ago under previous pontificates. So that argument against Pope Francis, if that makes Pope Francis a heretic, it would make Benedict and John Paul II a heretic as well. And there are some people, there are sedeva contests who do believe that. So you got to be careful. Your argument cuts both ways here. And then finally, there's some things, and Jimmy points this out here, there are loopy charges. They're just silly, like saying the Pope is a heretic because a staff that he carried looks like it has a satanic symbol. I mean, that is just kind of scraping at the bottom of the barrel here. If you're trying to say someone's a heretic, well, if you look at the staff, it looks like it's a satanic symbol. That's loopy, as Jimmy says. So what happened later is that Father George Rutler, who's a priest in the Archdiocese of New York, I actually had to write on Rutler a little bit because he quoted Mother Teresa once as saying you couldn't receive communion in the hand. And then in 2016, he walked back that statement. It's in my book, What the Saints Never Said. Maybe you were one of the four people who read that book, but I enjoyed writing it. So Rutler's name popped in my radar, like, oh, I remember studying about something he wrote a while back. So Rutler wrote in the comm box under Jimmy's article, and this is, I got to read the whole thing to you. This is easily one of the most pretentious and arrogant dismissals of someone I've ever seen. This is a great example of a pretentious, arrogant ad hominem attack. So to identify it and then to be able to dismiss it. So this is what Father Rutler says. I have been asked to respond to Mr. Jimmy Akins, and he misspells Jimmy. He thinks Jimmy's name is Akins and not Jimmy Akin, and he puts Jimmy's first name in quotation marks. So Mr. quotation mark Jimmy Akins's criticism of the scholarly statement imputing heresy to the Holy Father, and which Akin calls loopy. No, Jimmy didn't say the whole statement was loopy. He said the charge is saying the Pope's a heretic because his staff looks satanic. That's loopy, and he's right. One is surprised that such a screed, which engages the pedantry of an amateur, was published in the National Catholic Register. While prescinding from any judgment about the juridical force of that scholarly statement, which may be frail in the case of a sovereign pontiff, the content of the document speaks for itself and strikes me as considerable, if not even irrefutable. Okay, so Jimmy attacks something that's irrefutable. You've got to be able to poke a hole in Jimmy's argument. It never comes. Noting among the signatories some figures I know and even highly esteem, I was amused to see that they are dismissed as incompetent and unqualified by Jimmy Akins. I am unfamiliar with this man, but from what information I could find, he is from the scenic Ozarks, likes being photographed in a cowboy hat, and advertises himself as a Catholic apologist. Two things here. First, Jimmy points out that the people who are making the attack on Pope Francis, even though they're theologians, nearly all of them do not have degrees. They don't have areas of expertise in things like ecclesiology, which would be determining what the church teaches and whether someone satisfies the condition of being a heretic. So someone could be a theologian. I deal with theologians, you know, I deal with the writings of theologians all the time who are completely off the mark. They'll write about areas that are beyond their realm of expertise. And so what he does here is he tries to say, oh, if Jimmy dismisses these guys, well, who's this Jimmy Akins person? And then he says, this guy can't be smart because he's from the Ozarks and he has a cowboy hat. That is straight ad hominem. In fact, it's prejudicial and bigotry to say that somebody who doesn't meet your, you know, doesn't wear a rough, you know, scholarly ruffled little tie debating in Oxford, we'll get to that in a second, is what he writes doesn't seem to count. Nonetheless, so he goes on, Father Rutledge says, his efforts seem to be well-intentioned, and for them he receives an impressive income. However, I am moved to defend a man who needs no defense, since he is one of the most distinguished theologians in the English-speaking world, Father Aidan Nichols. So Father Nichols is one of the people who signed this open letter. And I was disappointed because I like the writings of Father Nichols. He wrote a great book called Rome and the Eastern Churches. It's a really great explanation of the difference between Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy and the different, you know, how to relate between the two. But someone can be smart in one area and then make a blunder in another. So here, what Father Rutler does, and you can point this out, this is the reverse of ad hominem, kind of. So ad hominem says your argument's wrong because you're a bad or inferior person. The reverse of that is the fallacy appeal to authority, to say, oh, your argument's right because you're a good or awesome person. Now, in some cases, if you're an authority, that helps your argument. That certainly helps to say, well, is this person an expert in what they're talking about? Okay, well, then that helps bolster their case, but it's not a guarantee they're right. Being an authority in a field just makes it more likely that you're correct, but it's not a guarantee that you're going to be right about a particular argument or a particular question. So even someone like Father Aidan Nichols, I would say, well, Father Rutler, could Father Nichols be wrong about this? What about Cardinal Muller? What about all of these other cardinals and distinguished theologians who disagree with Father Nichols? What about them as well? When we have experts disagreeing, even if we don't have experts disagreeing, we always have to go to the facts of the case that's involved. So Father Rutler finishes his comment, perhaps Jimmy Akins would be willing to debate Father Nichols in that distinguished Dominican's alma mater, the University of Oxford, the only requirements being that the debate be in the Latin with which Father Nichols is adroit, and that Jimmy Akins not wear a cowboy hat. I love Jimmy's response to this. Jimmy on Facebook said, a recent Combox remark by Father George Rutler brought a smile to my face. He makes several factual mistakes, including the implication I have only a year of college, and shares a fantasy about me being in over my head in a debate. Still, it's not every day that a priest of the Archdiocese of New York, who says he's not familiar with me, mocks my name, my appearance, and my cultural heritage. You stay classy, Father George, quotation marks, Rutlers. This is why I love hanging out with Jimmy here at the office. This is the exact response that you should have. This is the response you should have when you deal with people who engage in attacks, especially those, I hate the people, Catholics, who use verbose, presumptuous language and drop literary references. They basically try to say, you know, it's like Matilda, I'm big, you're small, I'm smart, you're dumb. And they use a lot of times, and we don't have time to get to it here in this episode, but in Thursday's episode, we will discuss David Bentley Hart and his defense of socialism, which basically it looks, I mean, the man is smart. He doesn't have to use a thesaurus, but it sounds like someone hit Control T and used as many big words as they could in their commentary. But here, so Jimmy models this, and that's what you should take from this lesson. When someone attacks you, especially whether it's crude attacks or it's erudite, verbose attacks with all kinds of lofty language, don't let them get under your skin. What you need to do is just to laugh it off, and you can gently twist the knife in them. That doesn't mean you should be a doormat. It doesn't mean that you should just say, oh, maybe you're right, or oh, it doesn't matter. You can stand up for yourself without becoming a bully like this person by showing just dispassionately, well, you're incorrect about facts 1, 2, and 3, and you never address my argument to show X is wrong. Why are you attacking me instead of my argument? I don't get that. That makes me think you don't really have a refutation for what I believe. And then you can always turn it back, just like how I think it's totally appropriate for Jimmy to put Father George, his name in quotation marks, Rutler's, after he just attacks Jimmy for deciding to go by Jimmy. Although if you read his older writings, Jimmy used to go by James Akins in his older writings. And I think that was back more when he was kind of, and he said this on his blog, that's when he wanted to more make a name for himself, not make a name for himself, but feeling the need to be, you know, need to be taken seriously, have a professional sounding argument. I mean, I could have Jimmy on to discuss that more, but what he's written on his blog is he did that early in his career, but now he feels more comfortable just being himself, just being Mr. Jimmy Akin. Not Jimmy Akins. And so I'm grateful for that. So do remember that. And then, of course, always, if you are the victim of an ad hominem attack, of a pompous bully, do not forget to pray for this person. Whether they crudely attack you or loftily attack you, they're hurting inside. They're either trapped by a lie, trapped by a deception, a falsehood. The devil's got a hold in them and now is encouraging them to get into other sins like anger, wrath, calumny, detraction. Pray for that person to be delivered from that. Kill your enemy with kindness. St. Paul said, kindness to an enemy is like pouring hot coals on their head. So that's what we need to offer. And hey, tweet Brian Sims, say, I will be perfectly kind to him if he'll come on my podcast to discuss this important issues. You guys have been great. Have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.